वासुदेवाय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 1 द हिस्ट्री ऑफ द लाइफ ऑफ अजामिल। टुडे वी विल डिस्कस टेक्स्ट नंबर 39। प्लीज रिपीट। कथम स्वित त्रयते दंडाः किं वा अस्य स्थानम् ईप्सितं दंड्याः किं कारिणः सर्वे आहो स्वित कतिचित् नृणां कथं स्वित् त्रियते दंडाः किं वास्य स्थानमीप्सितम् दंड्याः किं कारिणः सर्वे आहो स्वित् कतिचिन्नृणां कथं स्वित् ध्रियते दंडः किं वास्य स्थानमीप्सितम् दंड्याः किं कारिणः सर्वे आहो स्वित् कतिचिन्नृणां कथं स्वित् ध्रियते दंडः किं वास्य स्थानमीप्सितम् दंड्याः किं कारिणः सर्वे आहो स्वित् कतिचिन्नृणां कथं स्वित् ध्रियते दण्डः किं वास्य स्थानमीप्सितम् दण्ड्याः किं कारिणः सर्वे आहो स्वित् कतिचिन्नृणां कथं स्वित् बाय विच मीन्स ध्रियते इज इम्पोज्ड दंडः पनिशमेंट Kim, what? Va, or. Asya, of this. Sthanam, the place. Ipsitam, desirable. Dandhyaha, punishable. Kim, whether. Karinaha, fruitive actors. Sarve, all. Ahosvita, or whether. Katichita, some. Nranam, of the human beings. Translation. What is the process of punishing others? Who are the actual candidates for punishment? Are all karmis engaged in fruitive activities punishable, or only some of them? Please repeat. What is the process of punishing others? Who are the actual candidates for punishment? Are all karmis engaged in fruitive activities punishable, or only some of them? Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One who has the power to punish others should not punish everyone. There are innumerable living entities, the majority of whom are in the spiritual world and are nitya-mukta, everlastingly liberated. There is no question of judging these liberated living beings. Only a small fraction of the living entities, perhaps one-fourth, are in the material world. And the major portion of the living entities in the material world, 8 million of the 8,400,000 forms of life, are lower than human beings. They are not punishable, for under the laws of material nature, they are automatically evolving. Human beings who are advanced in consciousness are responsible, but not all of them are punishable. Those engaged in advanced pious activities are beyond punishment. Only those who engage in sinful activities are punishable. Therefore, the Vishnudutas particularly inquired about who is punishable and why Yamaraj has been designated to discriminate between who is punishable and who is not. How is one to be judged? What is the basic principle of authority? These are the questions raised by the Vishnudutas. Om Jnanatimirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Utapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganaragunatham Vitamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakha Anvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sintho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vanshakalpatrubhyascha Kripasindhubhyayivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram Hare Ram, Ram Ram Hare Hare. Katham Svidhriyate Dandaha, Kim Vasya Sthanam Ipsitam, Dandyaha Kim Karinaha Sarve, Aho Svit Katichindranam. What is the process of punishing others? Who are the actual candidates for punishment? Are all karmis engaged in fruitive activities punishable, or only some of them? These are very relevant questions raised by the Vishnudutas of all persons. They saw the Yamadutas doing something questionable, therefore they questioned. We have a responsibility to question if we see something questionable. Of course, one has to consider everything. Desha Kala Patra, time, place, and circumstance. Especially if one chooses, because it is a choice, to express displeasure. Kautilya Chanakya Pandit says, one should express displeasure in accordance to the shakti that one oneself possesses. Srila Prabhupada's general policy, whenever someone was criticizing something in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, his general policy was that you do better. If you can do that, then maybe there's a scope for criticism. Anyway, that's perhaps another matter. As gentlemen, the Vishnudutas were not immediately so much challenging the Yamadutas as much as they were asking, what is your understanding? To clarify, because sometimes, whenever there's a conflict, we say, there are three reasons. One reason, which we're quick to assume, is that the conflict is over competition for limited resources. That's called envy. Another reason that we have conflicts is that we have a clash in values. Values means dharma, because one of the primary definitions of the word dharma is ethics. And everybody's got his ethical system. And then another reason that we clash sometimes is that there's simple miscommunication. So in order to eradicate this third possibility, the Vishnudutas are trying to clarify, what is your understanding? You're the representative of the dharma. Dharma means Yamaraj. Dharmaraj. So what is your understanding? And particularly, look at the questions that they're asking. Can we even think to ask such deep questions? What is the process? Here the acharyas are commenting. Who is it? Katam swit, Sridhar Swami says, means kena prakarena. In what manner does this transpire? How is this carried out? Most of them echo the same thing. And he poses these things, he clarifies the meaning of these words very clearly. He says, tanam means the vishaya, the topic. What is the ground for punishment? Karinaha means the actors or the performers. Now, incidentally, if we notice the previous verse, these Yamadutas themselves are called karinahas. Nirdesha Karina. Nirdesha Karina means an order supplier, somebody who carries out the instruction. But they're Karinas, they're performers. So are all performers to be held responsible for what they do, or only some of them? The implication here is that maybe you people yourselves are guilty. They're not saying it directly, because generally the godly, they don't speak so directly all the time. It's described elsewhere in the Shastra that devatas in particular, they like indirect speech. That's, I suppose, an aspect of poetic speech. Anyway. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his comments on this verse, he frames the entire verse in terms of four questions we've already heard to some degree. First one is prakara prashna. What is the means of this punishment? How is it actually carried out? Then he says there's a karana prashna. What is the reason that a person is punished? What are the grounds for punishment, as we said? And then finally, vishaya or sthanam or desha. These are three words that are sometimes used as synonyms. Who are the recipients of this punishment? Who are the persons who are culpable or responsible to be punished? And kind of an offshoot of that is, what is the scope of the punishment? Vyavastha, he says, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Prabhupada's purport has, at the very outset, illuminated the last question about the scope of punishment in a way that only Srila Prabhupada could illuminate this. When we speak of all, are all actors punishable? We generally think in very limited sphere, isn't it? All of us. Well, does that mean all of us in this room? Does it mean all of us in this world? But Srila Prabhupada says, no, it means there are 8,400,000 different species of life in one quarter of the Lord's creation. And most of those are not held responsible for the principles of dharma. But most of the living entities that exist, they're not even in this world at all. And some of those who are ever liberated, they are in this world. And that's why we have to be very careful about judgment. And that's what gives rise to this question. Who is the person who judges? Srila Prabhupada is writing in the end of his purport, the heart of the matter. What is the basic principle of authority? Who has authority? Why has Yamaraj been designated to discriminate? Generally, we think discrimination is not a good word. We don't like to have discrimination going on, especially in modern and Western societies. Modern society means Western society. Shri Shri Guru Gauranga Abhyam Nama, Shri Shri Krishna Balarama Abhyam Nama, Shri Shri Lalita Vishakha Sahita Radha Shyama Sundara Abhyam Nama. So, discrimination, on the other hand, is definitely necessary. Discrimination is, in fact, the key word of Madhyama Adhikar. We all know there are three kinds of prerogative one may possess in devotional service or in spiritual life. The Kanishtha, or the youngest, he's a person who doesn't have such clear discrimination. He's mostly acting on sentiment or material desires. His faith is not that deep. It's also, therefore, pliable. Sometimes this person is very respectful to the deity but offends the devotees. So this is a very dangerous thing. That status, Srila Prabhupada said, we should try to get out of as soon as possible, because at any moment you can fall down. We'd like to point out the flaws of the karma, kanda, mark. And the favorite example is whom? King Nriga. He was doing everything properly, and he was from such an august family. If you do some research into King Nriga's background, you can see that he was not a lightweight in terms of dharma. He was very well educated. He was well trained. He was well behaved. He was pious. Dharmatma. And still he made a mistake, because to err is human. And for his mistake, he had to fall. So this is the weakness, the inherent weakness of the karma system. But actually, the devotional service is not less risky, because at any time we can commit an offense. And especially those who are prone to commit offenses are the Kanishtha Adhikaras. So the Madhyama Adhikar is a person whose faith has been deepened through Shastra Janya Shraddha. This is something Baladev Vidyabhushan discusses in his commentary on the beginning verses of chapter 17 of Bhagavad Gita, which deals with the different modes of faith. Do we even think about what mode my faith is in? Do I have Tamasic Shraddha? Do I have Rajasic Shraddha? Is my Shraddha Sattvic? Baladev Vidyabhushan says that some people many people in a pious society, in a Vedic society, they are running on fumes, so to speak. The tank is empty. The gas tank is empty, but if there are some fumes in the gas tank, the car will still go for some time. So they don't, this is modern society, and especially in modern Indian society, they're not necessarily investing so much in dharma, but because they have a good background, they're enjoying the phala, the fruits of their past dharma, for some time longer. So those persons, their faith is kind of automatic. It's a product of their socialization. It's something they inherit, but it is not shastrajanya. That is to say, it is not born of the austerity of study of the shastra. Ramanujacharya and everybody who follows him, including Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas, they comment that in the verse, vitaraga bhaya krodha bahutapasa means the austerity of actually studying the shastra. When you study the shastra very carefully in good association, Baladev Vidyabhushan says, then your faith is actually brought to a new level of maturity. You are not running on the strength of your past piety, which will run out. Neither are you acting automatically as a result of your socialization, perhaps in a good family, hopefully. You're actually using your discrimination. What is right and what is wrong? On the basis of shastra, this is the Madhyama Adhikar. Therefore, discrimination is actually a good thing. It's a necessary thing for the intermediate stage of spiritual advancement. The Uttama Adhikaris, those who are the best of the devotees, their faith is automatically very deep through long practice and through careful education. They don't fall. They can convert anyone else instead. They're very, very careful also, therefore. Anyway, so therefore the question is it's a deep question. How is one to be judged? Who can judge and on what basis? What is the basic principle of authority? The Yamadutas are also not fools. They may be mistaken in this case, but we will see in the coming verses of this chapter, they elaborate at great length principles of Dharma that are all correct. And Srila Prabhupada verifies that in his purport to the next verse, tomorrow's verse. So therefore, Yamaraj has been designated. He is someone who can actually ascertain whether this person has been dharmic or not dharmic. Now, the next question, who is punishable? Who are the recipients? In text number 43, that answer is given. Adharmakarinaha, the persons who perform adharma, persons who perform sinful activities. What is adharma? Who can tell me? What is adharma? What does it mean? What is against the principles of the Vedas? That is adharma. You have another answer? Irreligion. Sinful activity. Srila Prabhupada says it very clearly in his purport today. I'll read it. Those engaged... Only those who engage in sinful activities are punishable. So the Yamadutas have confirmed this in text number 43. They say, etair adharmo vijnataha sthanam dandasya yujyate sarve karmanurodhena dandam arhanti karinaha. Again, the same word is used, karina, the person who performs adharma. Now, Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, giving instructions for those of us who wish to be perfect human beings, what to speak of Krishna conscious human beings. Before you become Krishna conscious, you have to be a human being. Is that correct? In most cases, it's not invariable. Gajendra was an elephant. Jatayu was a bird, right? Bali was a monkey, adi adi. But in general, the understanding is that only a human being can take to Krishna consciousness, and we know dharmasya hina pashubhissamana, a person who is bereft of dharma, to the extent that he's bereft of dharma, that person becomes an animal. It's not just biology. It's actually ethics. It's even metaphysics, if you think about it. Scholars have looked at the definitions of dharma because they are multiple. And they've divided them into two broad categories, which we also hear from Srila Prabhupada. One is normative dharma, or in injunction of the Shastra, to follow whatever the Vedas command. There's an entire school of Vedic interpretation based on this principle, Mimamsa. Whatever the Vedas say, you don't even have to understand what it means, you just have to do it. There's some truth in that. There's always truth. No matter what we hear, there's always truth in it. Maybe not absolute truth, but there's truth there. On the other hand, dharma also means not just normative behavior or codified social convention, but it also means the intrinsic property of a thing. This is a more scientific and philosophical definition that we also hear, what one scholar calls naturalistic dharma. These two can be called respectively also sadhya dharma or siddha dharma. Sadhya meaning the ideal thing, and siddha meaning that which you cannot change because it's already perfect. You see? So these two definitions, two categories of definitions are always there, and we become confused sometimes about what dharma is or isn't, because we want to put dharma into a Procrustean bed. That is to say, we want to make it fit into a limited, static category, when in fact it doesn't. Dharma means all these things, all at once, and you cannot separate one from the other. Your constitutional position is eternally perfect. Your relative, temporary, karmic disposition and corresponding set of obligations or responsibilities in this world, they're non-different. One is the function of the other. F of X equals Y in algebra, isn't it? You designate this as a function of that thing, it becomes non-different. As Prabhupada says, if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. Anyway, so we're talking about dharma. What is this dharma? And more specifically, what is adharma? Because this is the thing we have to watch out for. Every one of us is guilty of adharma. If we don't believe this, just keep listening. And in a few verses, the Yamadutas are going to tell us. Some of us are religious. Some of us are irreligious. Most of us are semi-religious. This is the word he's used. Those who are in tamoguna, they are irreligious. Those who are in sattvaguna, they are religious. Those who are in passion, they are semi-religious. And most of us are in that category. This world is dominated by passion. And there's an increasing amount of ignorance, more and more every day. Now, Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 15, texts 12 through 14, illuminate this topic of what exactly is dharma, because there are five kinds. Does anyone know what they are? Five kinds of adharma. The first one is vidharma. Vidharma means the same thing as vikarma. You cannot take your vikarma and try and employ it in devotional service, because there's no such thing as vikarma yoga. Vikarma yoga, so-called, becomes actually vidharma. It's one of five branches of irreligion that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, commenting on that text, says should be avoided. They're prohibited. Nishiddha. Vidharma means that you're performing some your idea is that you're performing something which is religion, but in fact it's obstructing your performance of your own swadharma. You take it as religion, but it's not. Exactly as we hear from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 32. Does anybody know that offhand? Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text number 32. I'll see if I can find it. Krishna is discussing persons who have tamasic faith, and he says, adharma dharmam iti ya manyate tamasavrta sarvarthan viparitanscha buddhi sa partha tamasi. The intelligence, rather, which is tamasic, it takes adharma to be dharma. This is called vidharma. So that's the first one. These people are tamasavrata. They're covered by the mode of ignorance. We may be in their number. We have to think about this. We're meant to do this. That's what a human being does. So, vidharma and then paradharma. Paradharma is a little easier for those who have read Bhagavad Gita. What does paradharma mean? Somebody else's dharma. And this is so important to Krishna that he mentions it twice in Bhagavad Gita, even in chapter 18, where he's giving his, you know, the things that are going to be on the final exam, antima pariksha. Do not do someone else's duty. And if you do someone else's duty and call it your own, then that's called vidharma. These are important things to consider. They're based on discrimination, and we don't like that. Maybe that explains why after 40 years, most of Srila Prabhupada's instructions on the topic of Varnashram Dharma are still sitting in the drawer. Then there's Dharma Abhasa. Abhasa, we know, means? Abhasa? Reflection or a shadow, maybe a semblance of religion, it's translated here. In particular, Dharma Abhasa means a pretentious religious system manufactured, concocted by somebody who willfully neglects the prescribed duties of his order of life. This is called abhasa. And another example is given in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on that verse. And he says a person who dresses with ashes, and maybe he's wearing tiryang puntra, Mayavadis and Buddhists, for example, they're known to be religious people. But actually what they're preaching, nirvishesha shunyavadi, these are things that Srila Prabhupada very much opposed, because Krishna himself very much opposes them. The Shastra describes these things as, either Gnostic yavad, Gnostic means atheism, or prachandam bodham, veiled Buddhism, which is veiled atheism. They're atheistic, but they pass as religious. That's called dharma abhasa. Then the next one is given. Upama, upadharma. Upadharma. That is to say, semblance of religion. new type of religion created by somebody who's falsely proud and who opposes the principles of the Vedas. You can see there's a great deal of overlap here as well. We see sometimes people concoct these various devatas and worship them, particularly in village Hinduism. We can say there are two branches of Hinduism. There's spiritual Hinduism and material Hinduism. And material Hinduism at the village level tends to engage in a lot of this, what we might call upamadharma or upadharma. And sometimes they're even atheistic. Then, we get chala dharma. What does chala mean? Just pure cheating. Out and out rascaldom. Somebody just, not even interested in religion, he's just cheating people who are innocent and making a big profit. He's word jugglery. Or, there are two ways to interpret this, because we have two different readings. One of them says shabda pit. You misinterpret what the Vedas say by playing around with the word order. And then the other one is shabdabrit. That is the person who he accepts the Vedas what they say, but he doesn't actually follow them. In other words, it's lip service, hypocrisy. These are the two branches of chala dharma. You see? So actually all of us are guilty of this. All of us are guilty of these, to one degree or another. And therefore, these instructions have been given. For whom else? They've been given to us. Those who would execute the order of the spiritual master, appreciating that it is essential to bhakti and not extrinsic or external or bahya, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Ramananda Rai in their famous discussion in the Chaitanya Charitamritam. These things become very relevant for such a person who is interested in them. Now, I think it's clear that only human beings are punishable, not the animals, not the other species. Dharma is only for the human beings. But even amongst the human beings, Prabhupada is careful to note, not everyone should be held responsible. Srila Prabhupada spoke on this verse on July 20th, 1975, in San Francisco. And at that time he mentioned, specifically, the cow is not held responsible. If you go to the sabzi mandi, like I did yesterday, and you see there's a cow tries to push her nose into the vegetables and eat whatever she can, the cow is not taken to court. She's an animal. She's not held responsible. One time I was sitting with a godbrother in Nathdwara, the famous temple of Srinathji. If you give a donation, they'll give you a huge basket full of Mahaprasadam, most delectable. So we sat down in one nice place. There were some nice tables and chairs set up for the pilgrims. And we put this basket on the table and we were just prepared to take prasadam. Suddenly, everything just exploded. The prasadam flying everywhere, tables and chairs knocked over. What happened? When we got up, we saw that there's a cow just put with her nose pushed into this basket, quaffing everything as fast as possible. So cows are not held responsible. Animals in general. Scorpion bites you, you cannot, take the scorpion to court. Dharma is for human beings. But even among human beings also, it's very cryptic what Prabhupada writes here in his purport. He says, those who are engaged in advanced pious activities are also not held responsible in this way. What does that mean? Those engaged in advanced pious activities are beyond punishment. Well, what does it mean? Devotees. So when Prabhupada spoke in San Francisco, he was describing the animals are not responsible, the Brahmins are not held responsible, also saintly persons not responsible, women are not held responsible. Who else? Children are not held responsible. Now in this lecture, as Prabhupada was explaining these things, there was some disturbance. Mainly the children were making a disturbance. So one of the managers stood up, it seems unilaterally, he announced, all children must be taken out. And Prabhupada stopped him. And everybody was appreciative. And Prabhupada said, children are not to be punished. And then he said, women are also not to be punished. Those who are women, mothers, they know. If Prabhupada is giving the class and they send you out of the class, how crestfallen you must become. So Prabhupada was joking like this. Or maybe he was serious. At any rate, then he said, here in this assembly we have saintly persons, we have brahmanas, we have women, we have children, so who's punishable? This was Prabhupada in 1975. I was sitting in front of Prabhupada a year later when he spoke on this very same verse in Los Angeles on the 5th of June. And at that time it was very interesting. Srila Prabhupada was mainly talking about pramana. How do you know something? How do you know what you know? These two topics are very closely related, but they work in opposite hemispheres. But they both have vital relevance in today's world, in the modern world. I was recently in South India, in a small town, and we held a program in one temple, and several curious townspeople came. Maybe there was a crowd of 70 or 100. By the time we finished, 3 or 4 hours later, the crowd had swelled to 400 or 500, and they didn't want to let us go. The questions were firing left, right, and center. And one man came to me and he said, we're Hindus. We want to be Hindus, but we don't have any idea of what it means to be a Hindu, because nobody's telling us. He was, of course, right. All we know about the temple is that we come to the Kohil, and we take Pongal, and then we go home. And he was right. Why is this the situation? What has been lost that has created this situation? There's not even anybody to tell them what Dharma is in their own tradition, at least in that district. I was in Tiruchendur, famous place for Shaivas, more particularly worshippers of Kartikeya, Skanda, the god of war. And I could not find a single pundit in town who had a complete Sanskrit copy of the Skanda Purana. They just don't know. Therefore, what can they tell the people that they're supposed to be leading? There's a lack of pramana. Modern Hinduism does not understand or emphasize the importance of pramana. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada did. Now, on the other side of the world, or in the modern centers that have adopted that mindset wholesale, there's another problem, and that is that they do not understand what is dharma. We've just elaborated five kinds of dharma. Adharma. Raise your hand if you are already aware of these. I don't see any hands. Particularly in the Western world, it's as difficult to create a sense of dharma because of its multifaceted meaning as it is to go to China and try to tell someone about God. They have no frame of reference. There's no word in English for the word dharma because the concept is not there. The concept requires a word. If you don't have the concept, you don't require the word and therefore don't have it either. So in the Western Hemisphere, in the modern world, I should say, not just East-West anymore, this any concept of dharma is missing, and that is why most of ISKCON's efforts at Varnashram have failed. Because the concept has not yet been assimilated. And why? Srila Prabhupada quoted this verse in his lecture on this verse in 1976. If you want to know without any doubts, that is to say beyond Kanishta Bhakti, maybe even beyond Madhyamadhikari Bhakti, if you want to know beyond doubt, then hear, just hear, keep hearing. Guru Mukhapadma Bhakya Chite Te Kori Aika Arana Kori Homani Asha. Which part of Arana do we not understand? Don't listen to anything else if you want to advance. This is the key. Srila Prabhupada had this criticism of his disciples. They do not read the books. They think it's only for selling. Therefore, when people come to the temple, we get embarrassed because sometimes they know our books better than we do. I was on the Radha Damodar Traveling Sankirtan Party in 1976, and some of our devotees were arrested. The government in America does not realize that saintly persons selling Back to Godhead magazine are not to be persecuted. So they were persecuted, and there was a court case. Drishtadyumna Swami, in those days, he was one of the leaders on Radha Damodar Party, he had to personally appear in court. In the courtroom, the lawyer asked him to explain why this book distribution was transcendental and how people were getting spiritual benefit, especially if they didn't even realize that they were giving money to the Hare Krishna movement, which in some cases was the case. So Drishtadyumna Swami was arguing logically that this is called ajñāta sukriti. The person may give something to a saintly person, to a saintly cause, without even understanding, and then that person will make some advancement, unknowingly. Then the lawyer asked Drishtadyumna Swami, please open Bhagavad Gita as it is, your spiritual master's translation, to chapter 4, text number 35, I believe it is. And there he read, and he asked him, read the purport. So Maharaj thought, I better read the whole purport, which he did. And in that purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, a person who is ignorant of spiritual knowledge, even while engaged in devotional activity, remains on the material platform and gains no spiritual benefit whatsoever. This lawyer picked this reference out of Srila Prabhupada's book and threw it at one of the representatives of the Hare Krishna movement. This is why, well, I'm not drawing any direct causal effect relationship here, but because of experiences like this, Srila Prabhupada told us yesterday that the devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement must therefore be fully aware of the mission of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, otherwise they will be considered foolish. All devotees, especially preachers, must know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness so as not to be embarrassed and insulted when they preach, or worse than that, so that Srila Prabhupada himself is not criticized or insulted. We may be able to tolerate anything on our own behalf, but we should not misrepresent the spiritual master, which is exactly what the Yamadutas had done here. They knew the principles of normative dharma, sadhya dharma. They knew this, but they did not fully understand the scope of parodharma, dharma in its most pristine state, original and uncontaminated state, Bhagavata dharma, that they did not consider deeply enough. So these are some things we can think about with regards to this verse. There's, of course, more that can be said. It's a deep topic. These two verses go together. Srila Prabhupada spoke on them, on both of them. I've mentioned already, you can look them up, those lectures. But all of us have to judge, and all of us are going to be judged. We had better figure out how to do this, because it's already going on. It's just a question of whether it's going on properly or not. Therefore, we call it Siddha Dharma. It's eternally perfect. You can't argue with it. It's axiomatic. It's, in fact, inescapable. You can efface this process, but you can never erase it. So it's better to purify yourself. And that we heard 2 days ago, I think, from Ramakanta Prabhu. Sanskrita. Sanskrita means refined. Therefore, culture means that which refines you, sanskriti. There are two things, prakrit and sanskrit. Prakrit means let it go wild, tamasic approach. Sanskriti means to undergo samskara. Samskara is one of the aspects of normative dharma. If we undergo samskara, our consciousness will change. We will become refined. We will become civilized human beings, and these are the persons who are able to advance in Krishna consciousness, as Krishna says in chapter 7, text 28. Yesham tu antagatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvandva moha niramukta bhajante mandrata vrataha. We all, I think, it goes without saying, we all want to engage in devotional service with firm determination. Krishna is giving us the hint how to do this. Become pious. Become fully pious through dharma. This is the injunction. So I'll stop here. Does anybody have any questions or any comments on any of these things? Microphone is here.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Thank you for your wonderful class. And Bhagavad Gita is mentioned Traigunya Vishaya Veda. And Bhagavatam says, dharma prochita kaita atra. So is Bhagavatam not part of Vedas or not part of Vedic literature? Because it is also mentioned it's the cream of Vedic literature.
Dharma, was it?
Lord Krishna refers to, to Arjun, tells to Arjun that Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna. Vedas are dealing with the three modes of material nature. But then Bhagavatam is said to be the fruit of the Vedas, Nigamakalpataru. But it says dharma prochita kaita atra. It's all about transcendental dharma. So how to understand, is that Bhagavatam not coming from Vedas?
It seems as if the Bhagavatam is talking about Kaitava Dharma, doesn't it?
No, I want to say, is it that Bhagavatam is completely separate from Vedas? Or, on the other hand, it is said to be the fruit of the Vedas. So how, if Vedas
These are actually two questions. I think what you're asking is, why is the Dharma pushing on? Why is Bhagavatam pushing on this Dharma like this when in fact it's above all these things? Is that what you're asking?
I'm just asking that if Vedas are only dealing with the three modes of material nature, and Bhagavatam is said to be dealing with pure devotional services. So how Bhagavatam is actually coming from the Vedas only?
So you're actually asking about the status of the Bhagavatam.
Yeah, yes. So yeah. How
the Bhagavatam is considered to be part of the Vedic literature, then and you're right, it's the ripened fruit of the Vedic literature. Is that a simple answer for a simple question? Now, why are we dealing with Dharma, I think is what you're asking, is it not? If the Bhagavatam is dealing with things that are transcendental, nistraigunya, then Dharma deals with the gunas. Actually, if you think about it, this is analogous to the principle of pure devotional service, which Rupa Goswami says is beyond karma and gyan. Now, name anything that you do in devotional service that is not karma or gyan. There's nothing. Of course, it's transcendental karma and it's transcendental gyan, but karma and gyan to hai, right? So the same principle is here. The three modes of material nature are there. The topics of varnashram and other kinds of dharma, they're dealing with the three modes of material nature. We are in the modes of material nature. Although we were in the modes of material nature, to the degree that we are, our purpose is to approach Krishna, those things become transcendental also. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagno brahmanahutam brahmahivatena gantavyam brahmakarma samadhina. Anything. The offering, the ghee, the mantra, the priest himself, everything becomes Brahma, Krishna says in chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita. So we're not interested in Kurukshetra, Dharmakshetra. But because that's where Krishna is instructing Bhagavad Gita, because that's where Krishna is paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya tatrishkritam ityadi, therefore we're interested. We're not interested in Varnashram. It's true. Eto bahyo. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Ramananda Roy. But because it is the order of the spiritual master, that being the very essence of bhakti, therefore we're very interested. Is it clear? Bhagavatam is dealing with these things at length, many, many chapters, both in the 7th canto and the 11th canto, elsewhere as well. It is a priority, even for the person who is following exclusively Parodharma.
One more question is that a person may be in completely mode of ignorance and he comes to honor prasadam in temple. So while he's honoring prasadam, isn't he that he's in a karma free stage, and in that sense he's transcendental to the three modes at that time?
When a person comes and takes prasadam in the temple,
or comes to temple, chants Hare Krishna, while he's chanting Hare Krishna, is he not in the transcendental stage?
Yes.
Although he normally may be in mode of ignorance or passion or word like that. Do we understand like this?
Yeah, he's engaged. If he's fully engaged, he's in a liberated state as long as he maintains that status. But we don't. We stop chanting and we look for other things. We put down Prabhupada's books and we open up, you know, whatever news you read. This is the problem. Hearing that stops when the class stops, that's not really hearing. It has to keep going on and on and on and on and on. And the best way to do that is jare dekhe tare kaha, Krishna upadesh. Therefore, Prabhupada has given that instruction also. But you better know what you're doing if you're going to represent Srila Prabhupada. This is the point. Otherwise, you may be embarrassed, like these Yamadutas were. There were some other questions here. We should share the microphone.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you very much for a very nice class. You made one point which I wanted some clarification on, because we're living in the modern society, as you say, and there's a lot of things that a Shastra recommend and prohibit, and we have to face those things, and it's very difficult to understand how to apply those principles. The specific point I wanted you to clarify was the one about that women and children are not to be corrected. But living in a modern society, that we see that a vast number of criminal people are within the female bodies. We have
said, you say the vast number of criminals are in female bodies? I don't think that's statistically correct. At least
we have,
not in North America. I don't know where you're from, but
okay, we have criminals who are in female bodies.
Also, yeah.
Yeah, also.
Okay.
And perform very heinous crimes. So how should one address that. I may not have to, but how would someone in our position deal with that?
I think that this sort of practical quandary also explains why we don't touch Dharma. It's not easy. It's very, very difficult, especially if you cannot discriminate, especially if you're not even reading enough that you have a chance of that. You see? Therefore, we don't touch it. It's true. There are many, many difficult situations that have to be dealt with, and that is our challenge. Who else cares? Who else has the mandate? It's for us. So the intelligence of the Krishna consciousness movement, collective intelligence of its advanced members, has to be invested in questions of this sort. But the bedrock of that endeavor is to actually know what Srila Prabhupada's books say. As I said in the beginning, there's no question of applying Dharma until you understand what it is, because you cannot have abhideya without the basis of sambandha gyan. This is sambandha gyan. And without sambandha gyan, your chanting will remain offensive, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others. So, yeah, I'm not going to address that specific question. You know, that's for an executive. It's not my forte. I hope you'll forgive me for that.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you.
Prabhu, from the question raised by the Vishnu Dutta, I think I look at it to be very diplomatic. The reason for that is that the duty of the servant is to carry out the instruction of the master. So the Yamaduta, they are on the instruction of Yamara, which is the authority. So how would they expect them to answer the question?
Srila Prabhupada said, first deserve, then desire. We all desire to represent Srila Prabhupada. We desire to spread Krishna consciousness, but there's adhikar involved. You actually have to have some adhikar. You have to know what you're talking about. You have to realize what you say. Otherwise, don't speak over your head. Prabhupada used to criticize very strongly people who espouse some ideals or some ideology without actually having assimilated or applied it. He called them cheaters. So we actually have to have, we should speak according to our realization and not beyond that and not below that. Is that okay? Everyone has some adhikar, some more than others, but everybody has to be fixed in his own position. Is that satisfactory? Speak into the microphone.
Okay. The message is clear, but from the translation, one can understand that the question looks like a diplomatic question.
It looks like the question is a rhetorical question or a diplomatic question.
Well, you
may say that, but in fact, as Prabhupada's purport shows us, and as I've tried to also illuminate, these questions are actually very vital, because we all have answers to these questions, whether we realize it or not. We're all applying our own answers to these questions. But Dharma means that you're not concocting. Otherwise it becomes upadharma. We have to actually understand what the spiritual master says, and we have to apply that. Is that okay? Srila Prabhupada, speaking on this verse, he was very strong on this point as well in San Francisco. He said that we do not say, I believe. We say, this is what the Shastra says. But you've got to realize what the Shastra says if you're going to say it. Because you're putting yourself in the position of an instructor. Is that clear? We're all mandated to preach, but according to our realization. You want to add something?
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. I have two questions. This topic of... My first question is this. This conversation of Dharma in a context of bhakti is always a little bit tricky to understand, because we always hear the idea that by bhakti you're purified of your conditioning. And also what I've generally seen amongst devotees is I've always understood the word dharma to mean nature and honesty. So you act according to, you use a thing according to its nature, you use your body according to its nature, and you do it honestly. So if you're a brahmana, then you perform that function, and then you do it honestly. The tricky thing is, in a bhakti context, you may have a devotee, say for example, whose conditioning is to be a kshatriya, and he's asked to do a brahminical function. And perhaps he does it poorly, then we call it the result of mixed devotional service. And we say, well, he just has to purify himself. We don't call it upadharma or cheating dharma. We just say, this is mixed devotional service, he has some shortcoming, but by the process of devotional service, he will continue and purify, and then he'll be situated in a proper position. So I would really like to understand, as an individual, how important is it for sadhakas to operate according to their nature? I mean, we're not beyond the modes of nature, like you've clearly explained. So there definitely is some room for us, yeah, not beyond the modes of nature. So if I have a certain, is that what you say when you're talking about dharma in ISKCON? Is that what you mean, that we have to have a better system for individuals and their natures being recognized and then them being engaged accordingly in a temple situation or outside?
There's no question of better or worse system. The system is eternally perfect. It's already there. What needs to be expanded is our realization. And, you know, as far as a person being engaged in a certain way, Srila Prabhupada has made it very clear throughout his books that a person should be engaged according to his natural position in society. And there are rare exceptions to that, of course, as there always are, just like there are even exceptions to the fact that one has to be a human being to take to Krishna consciousness. But they are very rare. And we cannot depend on that any more than we can expect most of our members to get honorary degrees. It doesn't happen. And if we've had any social problems in ISKCON, which I think are pretty well documented, we might consider that this could explain that. Why is it, for example, that for the last 4 or 5 years, the GBC has given the largest amount of ISKCON funding to the Child Protection Office? It's to protect ISKCON's children from other ISKCON members. That indicates a social problem. So, we have to look and see, what am I doing wrong? If I was properly engaged, maybe I wouldn't be deviant. Is that okay?
So then,
you said you had two questions.
Yeah, I had two questions. But just a clarification on the first one then. So then if somebody is deviating in his position, then we shouldn't just write it off as mixed devotional service. We should actually perhaps examine to see, is this person perhaps being misengaged?
But again, this is the responsibility of the spiritual master or a person that person has accepted as his authority.
Right, right.
Yeah, we can't just go around instructing everybody.
No, that's not what I meant.
Yeah, this is what spiritual master, I mean, it's not an easy thing to be a spiritual master. It's not just, you're a sincere devotee. You actually have to know something also. It's not there. It's not a very easy job. Very, very difficult job. And therefore a lot of karma attached if you are not qualified for the job. Okay?
Yeah, thank you. That really clarifies it. My second question has to do with this point about education in our society and how many times our devotees may not be aware of our philosophy sufficiently or something like that. What I've come to notice, even myself and others also, is that generally the basic points of Prabhupada's philosophy are pretty much well known. You know, we're not this body, Krishna is God, bhakti is the process, things like that. But then when we start talking about perhaps something more advanced, say for example like rasa tattva, now we may not be qualified to experience rasa tattva, but since the acharyas wrote about it, do you think it is important for devotees to understand how the mechanics of it work, not to pretend that they're advanced devotees in relishing rasa, but what is the qualification for understanding just the mechanics of how rasa works?
There's a couple of things that I can say here in this particular topic. Number one, it should be understood that this is gyan until I've actually assimilated it. And number two, if I have a particular predilection within the realm of rasa bhakti, it should be understood that that is mental, perhaps more than spiritual. These qualifications have to be there. In other words, one should recognize one's own limitations, and one should, as you said, be honest about where one actually stands. It's our responsibility to read everything in Prabhupada's books, and Prabhupada's books include these things. So it's important. We have to know them. Rasabhas, this is something that's very, very relevant in my service, because I'm translating. So I have to see, you know, I remember when I was in college, there was a small group of medieval poets who wrote in Brijbhasha. So I selected one of these poets because they're supposedly known as Gaudiya Vaishnavas. But they're not mentioned anywhere in Chaitanya Charitamritam. They're not mentioned anywhere even in Bhakti Ratnakar. They're not mentioned by any of the standard acharyas in our line, all the way down to Srila Prabhupada, including Prabhupada's books. Why is that? There must be some reason for it. So, you know, then it comes down to the question of, you know, how do you actually determine rasa and rasabhasa? Rupa Goswami has, there's so many things we can say about this. But what appears to be rasabhas sometimes is not so. And some examples of that are given in Padyavali. And what appears to be very nice, rasa, is actually rasabhas. And the adhikar to actually determine the difference between those two is not a very easy thing to attain. One has to be very sensitive, very advanced, pure in heart, educated. One has to read Prabhupada's books and understand them. Therefore we say, yatha jnasasi tat shrinu, Krishna says. We need to hear. We need to keep hearing. And the way you hear and keep hearing is by serving devotees. Vasudeva Kataruchi. Is that okay? All right, it's getting late. We have to stop now. Thank you very much. It's very late. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.